Firefighting is essential for our communities, but it's never been easy. Today, with increased heat loads and toxicity, the job's more dangerous than ever before. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop highly advanced safety equipment to protect us on the job. MSA's Globe Gear is performance and protection in perfect balance. It's designed to meet the challenges we face every day and to keep us safe and healthy during our careers and beyond. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Hump Day Hangout with Fire Engineering and the Clarion Events Group. And glad you're here with us with the International Society of Fire Service Instructors and Traditions Training. We get to present this once a month, thanks to Bobby Halton and his trust in both organizations. So we'll just kind of get started off. Obviously, Bobby's not joining us, and we got a couple vacancies today between Traditions and the ISFSI. So it's just the four of us. We got Tony Carroll, Dan Shaw, and Doug Mitchell with us here today. And we're just kind of following up from last month's show where we started talking about training our incident commanders. Chief Carroll brought up a pretty good point. We talked a lot about the theory, the thought processes that go into being an incident commander, and but not really the hands-on portions that actually help us make incident commanders, the training, actual training programs that help us mold our incident commanders into who they're going to be out on the street. So we're just going to try to touch base with obviously from different departments and see what each one of us is doing to train our battalion chiefs. You know, virtually is probably not the right word, but, you know, using simulations and programs to get them ready when they go out on the street. So it's 7:02 when they have the gasoline tanker hit the children's school and the garden apartment building and got to deal with all that sort of stuff, that we have some kind of a tools in the toolbox for them. So Tony, thanks to you, we got a good topic. So we're going to let you go ahead and fire off here and see where we go from there.
All right, thanks. Good afternoon. I'm glad to be with you guys today. I there's a couple of things that we do in my job right now. There's a captain who's training to become a battalion chief or to be able to act as a battalion chief. He has a checklist of some things he has to complete, ride along hours with a current battalion chief to be promoted. I do remember we had to have a command and control class from the National Fire Academy. And then there was some internal training. Again, like I said, the checklist that we had. Then you sit with a deputy chief, and he kind of the shift commander. He'll go through some scenarios with you and check you off to become a acting chief. And then you know you ride with a chief's aide, and you get to run the show for the 24 hours that you're there. Or like today, I'm going in tonight for some overtime, and I'm going to relieve a captain who is acting today because he went through that ride along, the check-offs and that kind of thing. But that's really it. I think that, you know, we have some opportunity now to hopefully we've been looking at some simulators, the Sims You Share stuff. We've been looking at that. Hopefully we can develop some stuff to really test the guys, see that they can meet the benchmarks in those simulations, and then understand some of those roles there as far as an incident commander. Of course, there's not a lot of training on the admin stuff, which is what I could really use that. But the incident command stuff, yeah, we do kind of practice that and run people through to prepare them for those incidents. That's really all we're doing. I want to do more, and I know some of the other departments here are doing more, and I'd love to find out what they're doing.
So when you have this person next to you, man, what are some of the stuff that you drill them on or go with? I think that's, you know, some interesting points. What, you know, we'll hit the other, you know, the three of us, some of the drill things that we do. Let's take Sims You Share out of it, simulation part of it. What are some of the other drills that we do that, you know, that's an important position. It seems like we're lacking in training other than lecturing people on what they're supposed to do.
No, I agree. It's very important. And it's kind of up to the battalion chief who is training that member while he does the ride along. You know, depending on if that battalion chief has been a chief for a very long time. Like I've been only chief for 3 years now. And I think there's some Chiefs that we have that have been around a lot longer who would be better to train someone new that's coming up. So there's almost like it needs to be a train-the-trainer for us to be able to pass this information on to the battalion chief, to the prospective ride-along battalion chief. There is, like I said, there's a checklist that of some things that the higher-ups or the assistant chiefs have determined we want to make sure our guys know. And again, we'll throw the what-ifs at them, you know, while we're riding along with them, make sure that they go through the proper setting up of the command post, proper assuming command when they get there, and that kind of thing. And there is the checklist, but that's really about it. Okay, now you're in charge of this incident. It has wound down. It's not an increasing incident situation. You know, we can throw some what ifs at that guy while we're in the buggy. Again, I think it is lacking of a really good structure, and we have a lot of opportunity now to make it that.
All right. So, Dan, you want to fire this one off, or Doug, do you want to take one? I'll let you two fight it out. Yeah.
I'll take this one. Because
Doug fills in as a battalion chief. Let him go with that one first.
Yeah. So I think, Tony, you're right. And my department, it's very, very formal. In fact, it's a 6 or 7 week program where new battalion chiefs, when they get promoted, go to the chief's command school, where they not only run incident simulations, but they do drills on communications. They get lectures and hands-on from all the different components, special operations, hazmat, Marine Division, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very formal program that all chiefs have to attend prior to going out into the field, and you know, and then doing those ride-alongs as part of that program as well, where prospective chiefs are promoted to battalion chief. They then, during, let's just say, one day a week, they're going to the field and they're riding along with battalion chiefs, probably in the area where they're going to be assigned, so they can, you know, ride the front seat, talk with those chiefs, see what their concerns are, both administratively and obviously tactically. For me, as a captain who sometimes gets to asked to fill in for a partial tour, to act as a battalion chief, we call them ABCs, acting battalion chiefs. We have a command class as well. It's the captain's development program. And until you go through that 5 or 6 week program, you are not able to act as a battalion chief. So in that program, specifically, they focus on incident simulations, again, communications drills, and also in that component, they bring in some guest lecturers to tell you a little bit more about some of the administrative parts of management, which I think really gets, they bring in some of the senior captains and the senior chiefs who've got time and experience, as you mentioned, not just sitting in the buggy for a couple of hours or sitting in a chief's car for a couple of hours, but actually hearing those stories and the things that they did and did not do. That's some of the best lessons we learn are some of those that we learn from others so that we don't make the same mistakes that they made. So I think there's definitely value in the informal programming. And I think that then you can set up how you want. You can run as many incidents as you want. You can see who is meeting and who is not meeting those benchmarks as you stated before. It certainly was eye-opening to me because, you know, maybe from fireman to lieutenant, there's a big change in your operations. Whereas an officer, you know, your first time as an officer, you have to kind of, you still want to do stuff, but you got to kind of let the crew figure things out on their own. I think an even bigger step is that role from captain to battalion chief, where you are now running fires. As a fire officer, rarely are you put into a command situation. Yes, you're in command of your unit, and you may be in command of a apartment per se, but the overall bigger picture, stepping into that battalion chief role, it's quite a big shift in your roles as the as an officer. So that's my two cents on it. I'm sure Dan will have a bunch.
So you had a 5 week. You had to go through a 5 week course to be an acting an ABC.
Correct. Yes. If you get promoted captain,
wow,
you can get promoted to captain and go right to the field. It all depends upon space and timing for that rank. The Chiefs do not go to the field without the training. Now, I can go to the field as a captain because my role tactically is similar to a lieutenant. But if I'm going to go to that next level and now act as a battalion chief, I have to go to that, the captain's development program that teaches you basically more often than not. It's designed, I think, primarily to have you help you assume that role as the battalion chief.
So captain's development school, and then once you're promoted to battalion chief, another 6 weeks or so?
Yes.
Of a formal BC school. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so each rank, lieutenant, captain, and battalion chief have that, those schools kind of built in.
So, Doug, just for clarification, and when you go to that school, you're going there because your promotion exam is based upon your seniority and your time in your rank, right?
Yes.
And you go to the school, and then you get like officer one, officer two, instructor one, instructor two, all that, right? And that part of some of the what's composed in there?
Loosely. It's more of a home rule type of a program. It's not, I don't know what exactly. I know in the first line supervisors program, which is for lieutenants, I know you do get instructor one there. I'm not sure what exactly how it lines up with those national programs, but there are some national certifications that do come out of it. Yes.
And I think that's some of the difference in our organizations. I think attorneys probably same as ours. Like, we have pre-qualifications before you can even sit for the exam. So it might compose some of what you guys do post. And I think it's organizationally dependent upon what they want. Like, you know, you can't even come in and sit for the exam until you have some of the things that you might get when you go to FLIPS or to those officer schools to have something, you know, some foundational program that is certified before it's a home rule type of program you have. So now, and that's, we're in the midst of defining our program. We're going through, we've promoted some new deputies. One of the things that we recommended after one of our close call reports was kind of a redo of our command training center. So we're very fortunate at our training academy to now have a battalion chief and a deputy overseeing it. Our command training center, which is down the road right now, set up for a command vehicle. So you walk in, you get a command vehicle, you sit in the vehicle, giant screen in front of you. We can run through tactical situations. You can walk to the back of the vehicle. You're able to pull that out and be able to run through some tactical situations. And then also building that out is having some more formal programs. So a battalion chief school, much like what you're talking about, Doug, you know, we're going to have a formal program for it, because what we really suffer at in the fire service in general is we don't really prepare you for the next rank until you're in the next rank, with that one exception being a chief's aide, because then you get to see what the chief does. And then you go back to the firehouse, you go, oh man, anything I deal with now is, you know, child's play compared to what I saw the chief have to do all the time. So we're really trying to focus on the fact that we're trying to train you long before you ever get to that position. So, you know, some of its structure is doctrine, which, you know, we put into our command officer's manual that kind of breaks down it in a very generic way. But then when you get to the point of like when you're in Doug's position and you're a captain, who wants to fill in as a battalion chief, which we allow a certain number out of the 7 battalions can fill in if the battalion chief's off. You know, they go through a task book they have to fill out goes from the admin to coming to understand the HR process, how to handle personnel situations. And then what we are formalizing now is we have 7 battalions. We want that captain to ride with their home chief. So if they're coming from battalion 4, they're going to start with battalion 4. Then we want them to arrive at the other 6 battalions. And that gives them the ability to get perspective, because Fairfax County is pretty big. So you get the urban sprawl of the vertical city of Tyson's Corner, high-rise firefighting, to rural water supply, and try to understand tankers and that type of business. And they're all vastly different. Some of our battalions, you know, myself as the ops deputy and the other battalion will be there within 5 minutes. Other places, it might be 15 minutes that you're getting another chief showing up to throw you a bone and help you out. So we try to get them as much exposure as possible during those days that they go ride with those battalion chiefs. And they're meeting certain tasks with their, more importantly, what they're getting is that mentoring and direct question answer with attorneys you kind of alluded to, from the newest chief who has something great to offer, to the most senior tenure chief. Here's some things I've learned over time. And then they'll wrap up back with their home chief to kind of go over that chief's expectations. And then their last day, they'll ride with the ops deputy. And that is the ability. And typically what I would try to do is to get them to go with me when they're riding with us, go talk to the assistant chief of ops also. So they unilaterally get the importance of the position, that it is immensely difficult to go from task-driven, pulling hose lines, forcing doors, to now you're sitting in a vehicle feeling helpless, but you have an enormous responsibility that every action you take is going to have an impact on the livelihood of those people you're putting in harm's way. So we try to really have a program that helps that. Now, when you get to battalion chief, obviously you get promoted, and we, again, are in some measure of change because we're blending our captain ranks together. So we have some people who have not been active battalion chiefs who are doing really well on a promotional exam. They'll get promoted to chief. We'll run them through the same process as a film battalion chief so they can, you know, get some of that. But also, you know, they're going to be right in the position. And that's where it's incumbent upon my position to really make sure that we're supporting them, but also their peers who are around them are equally supporting them. So, you know, we try to run them through. I know in my last assignment when I was on A shift, one of the things I really enjoyed is I had very tenured battalion chiefs. And I did not want to run them through simulations that were the 20-minute single family dwellings, basement fire. If you don't have that by this time and can't comprehend that, I think we're doing you a disservice. So we really try to give them a prolonged 40 to 45 minute incident that was very complex. In this case, it was a movie theater that was fully occupied. It had a capacity around 2,000, fires in the walls, you know, and we don't have a manual per se for a movie theater. So you have to be dynamic in your decision-making where you put the resources and really try to tax them for a solid 30 to 40 minutes. And then we try to work on the transition of the ops deputy showing up and how do we transition that command. And that's one of the things we've been really working on is that transition to a higher level chief that shows up, but also the command team concept of that, you know, hey, if the second chief shows up, you don't have to arbitrarily just throw them aside Charlie for good measure. You know, you can use them in a capacity to build a command team. But, you know, regardless of what rank it is, when we talk about the support and the expectations for our new chiefs and the training, we always come back to, and this is one thing to ad nauseum I preach to our chiefs, is look, at the end of the day, the fire always gets a vote. No matter what you do, the fire always gets a vote. You could be as well-trained as you want to be, but the fire doesn't assimilate to our manuals. So we have to be prepared for that. So what do we come back to? We come back to our core foundation of the command and control of an incident, making it very clear your commander's intent. I need your primary search done. I need line on fire. I need multiple washes. I need these type of things done. Now, company officers, I empower you to go do this and execute it. And usually it's a telling sign for me as I walk up the command post is I'll always ask first question. There's no secret. It's very transparent. Where's the fire? And in 15, 20 minutes, a chief officer who is an incident commander can answer that question. You know, I'm not really sure we have a true grasp of what we're dealing with and that we know exactly where our focus should be. And I think something that comes back to also is, you know, we focus so much on the extinguishment effort when it comes to when we arrive at a fire, that was really important. It builds a great foundation for a strong tactical plan, is that we locate, we confine, we compartment, we extinguish. And those previous things, locate, confine, compartment, are great tactical decisions of, hey, where's my problem? Here's where I'm going to put my lines to keep this thing contained to the attached garage. Now we can extinguish the fire. We got it in place. And all those things might happen, you know, in a matter of seconds. But if we forget the first one and we don't realize that garage fire is happening because it started in the basement, is now communicated up in the garage, and that's where it's showing to us on Site Alpha, then we've missed something. And now we're behind the eight ball. Now we're committing resources to a problem. And so we try to involve that all into the training, is to try to give them as much as we possibly can to make the transition for them going from the right front seat of an engine company to being a battalion chief a little smoother. So they understand that you have to pull back. You can't have that narrow focus. You've got to have that 30,000 foot view of seeing what exactly the problem is. And then how do I plug all my pieces in to keep this thing confined, compartmented, put it out, and make sure we're executing searches rapidly. And it seems very simple, but obviously we all know as you put in that chaotic environment called fire and you know things can go sideways. But we want them to have a foundation they continue to pull back to and say, all right, if things are going sideways, what can I pull back to? And we try to incorporate that into our command board so that, you know, it's the same command board for the engine company officers, to the battalion chief, to the deputy, just in different sizes. And that command board is meant to solely be something for them to track resources. But hey, if they're really flustered, if they look at the top panel of their command board, it will give them the, hey, I need to recalibrate. All right, do I have two water supplies? Where's my first line, second line? Do I have the primary underway? Do I have ladders in place? And just something to, you know, always keep on that trigger. So not only do we reaffirm it through our direct contact and teaching, but let's reaffirm it through our doctrine and our manuals, but also through the expectation we have when you're maintaining your command and control of the incident.
Can I go build on that? I think that something you touched on earlier when we were talking to Doug about the content of his training, right? You said like Fire Officer 1, Fire Officer 2, Instructor 1. And while I believe those are important, they're so far away from sitting in the front seat of the engine, truck, chief's buggy, and so on. And I think that what we need more of is not certification, but we need mission-based training. And I mean, you guys, I've been a big fan of Mark Davidson and what is going on there with that officer development stuff. And it seems like it's growing, right? I mean, you see the immediate return on the investment, or at least whoever writes the check for that has saw the return on the investment and realizes that that's where the real emphasis needs to be. Again, we could do away with Officer 1, 2, and so on. We got to check the box, but that could be another week hump day hangout when we talk about certification versus mission. But no, that's awesome, and you have, you know, whether it's a 5-week thing like Doug's doing, or a 6-week chief school. I mean, that's what it's all about, is the investment in those people, right? I mean, giving them the fire trucks are nice and shiny, and the chief's buggy is great, but it doesn't matter what resources there. You have to fill it with a guy who's going to be able to do it, and challenging him there with all those different scenarios. It's really him or her, excuse me, is really really quality. So this is good. I think that hopefully we can build on this in my place.
Well, and I think so you kind of hit on, like, when we look at the training, and I will always say, like, if you have it, our apparatus technician, which are apparatus drivers, and our battalion chief positions are the two positions, I think, in the fire service we really neglect and continue doing that. Because once you get to it, you're like, you're good, you got it. And that's a big miss on our part. So, you know, when we try to think about the process, and for me personally, I try to think about, like, the pre, before they test, when they're in the process of testing, getting ready to, you know, go for that promotion, and then what happens afterwards, that post. And there are three different, very, very different segments, because what I've been fortunate to work with some of the guys who were studying and becoming a chief is, you know, I would always tell them, like, I am not going to help you pass the test. I'm more inclined to make sure that you'll be a good chief, that you understand the concepts we're talking about and the theory behind it. And if you get it, you'll do fine on the test anyway. But I don't want you just to regurgitate a manual and say, damn the fire, I will get through with this thing I have to say on the radio. No, I mean, that's your job, is to listen. So I think it's really important that we have some plan of, hey, for those people, that talent management aspect of it, who are those people we think would be good chiefs? How do we start instilling in them the training to get them to that point that they believe in themselves and want to become chiefs? Because we need them. We need them to be leaders. And then when they're going through the process, how do we really mentor and socialize them to what that transition is going to be like, going from Doug's position to my or Tony or Ricky's position of being a chief officer? Now you're there. We're not going to just leave you out there and, you know, hope by chance that you go to 12 fires a year and once a month you can check the box. We know invariably, I mean, just like engine companies, we have some chiefs that have been to plenty, the second due chief from plenty of fires. But to really get a working fire that was complex, as a first dude, it might be a few months. And we don't want there to be rusty in that. So having some full program to really look at those three aspects of it, and then, you know, like you said, I mean, is put the money into it. I mean, one of the things that Mark Davidson, who is, you know, the brain trust behind our officer development, has done a really good job is understanding that we have a great privilege in our county, or we have a great relationship with our noble region. So why not share? So let's just put on these, you know, short, hard-hitting classes that hit different topics that people want and offer free. And just, you just come and you get to sit in the class and get the dialogue. And for any of us who teach those classes, I mean, you equally get something back out of it that you're giving. And you understand that relationship and how important it is. So it doesn't take an enormous amount of effort. It just takes people willing to share knowledge and experience. And that's not being pretentious. It's like, you know, you have some of these things. You feel that there's a benefit to it. So, you know, why not share? Get out there and get that information to other people.
Especially when you see those kids show up that are just dying for it. They're just, they're giving up a day. I mean, they're giving up good time to come and listen to, you know, you talk about stuff. I mean, it's really.
And you know, tell me, you know, Mark does a good job. I was asked you to travel to the forest. You get guys from Pennsylvania. I mean, one, the fact you even want to endure pre-COVID Virginia traffic is notable. But then you sit through it and you get through it through, you know, 3-4 hour class. And that's what I'm talking about, like that talent management. You know, we should see those people like, this is someone who's coming to listen to something that's outside of their wheelhouse just so they can get better and learn. Man, that's fantastic. And that's where we really lack when it comes to the fire service is the talent management aspect of it, because of how litigious we have become and that we don't want to really say that I'm going to help with Doug, but not that person. We can help everyone, but let's really focus on talent management for the whole core. And how do we do that? That broad stroke of, hey, we're going to do this training. Who wants to engage? Who wants to come and learn? We'll take them all. Let's have them all. It only benefits us more as a fire service.
Good conversation, and it brings up a lot of points. I'm going to go down a different rabbit hole, and then I'll come back to all three of you with some of the questions that I have. So, in our organization, we're running a battalion chief school this week, and obviously Chief Hughes and his team of operational performance have put the school together, and they've you know, had battalion chiefs come in, assistant chiefs, that the deputy's talking today, and but they've also done some neat things with like skills drills and stuff like that. So, you know, like when I'm going to go back to Doug here in a little bit, when he talks about, you know, they do communications drills, like what exactly are we talking about with the communications drill? And, you know, and I'll go back to Dan, you know, to give you a heads up, you know, go back, God, how many years when we, you know, the four of us at Traditions used to go out and teach officer development school when we did the Lego drill, and just how much that, you know, woke people up, for lack of a better term, you know, to how bad communications was. So one of the things we did yesterday, which I found pretty interesting, and we've done it before, is audio listening skills, where we give them a command chart, or we give them a checklist book, and you know, everybody, you know, yesterday everybody had their command books out, and we're ready to go, and then all we do is play an audio, and we task each one of those individuals to track the incident as it goes along, and we use an incident outside our jurisdiction, so obviously nobody would have any advantage, or they weren't used to the terminology. So I mean, I say unfortunately, and I think we're paying honor to that this particular gentleman. So I mean, we the first one we used was the line of duty death in Prince William County with Kyle Wilson. You know, that audio is readily available online through the extensive line of duty death report that they did for you know, Kyle Wilson. And then we play that audio, and here are numbers and terminology that these battalion chiefs are used to, and they're having to track as the battalion chief was trying to, you know, as units were calling him and talking to him and writing all that stuff down. And then after about, you know, 10 or 11 minutes, they cut the audio off. And then there's a series of questions that the instructor asks of, you know, where was, you know, and, you know, where was engine 12's line? What size line was it? Make sure that they're listening to what that person was actually saying. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about this stuff is the task saturation piece comes in, where people just get so overwhelmed or are listening to what the transmissions are, but aren't truly reacting to them. So, you know, making sure that they're able to recall that information. So, and, you know, I recall it by writing it down. You know, so if you say, you know, in this particular incident, you know, and Tony, please correct me if I'm doing it's wrong or grossly wrong. Engine 14 or engine 12, we're taking a 2.5 inside, you know, inside the building. So, I mean, that's something that we ask them on an on-scene report to denote, you know, one of their 2, 6, or 7 steps that they have to say. But does the incident commander actually know what size hose lines inside the building? You know, so that's one of those things they had to write down. That was one of the questions, you know. What size line did engine 12 take inside the structure? Just so you knew it. And then, you know, all the other little radio transmissions that went through this, there was probably about a page and a page and a half. And Dan and Doug, you guys know, because we did that drill many times, you know, and then we go to the second audio, you know, from another, a totally different jurisdiction. And there's a lot of stuff, good stuff out there. I mean, Stockton, California has a lot of good video with audio that's attached. And as an instructor, go watch that video, write down a bunch of questions, and then have the students track that fire. And the important point about that is we want them to track the fire, but they have to hand the piece of paper in at the end of the drill. So after we get done asking them the questions, you know, then they had to hand their piece of paper and we can actually see if they wrote it down. I mean, you know, Tony, we mentioned it earlier, but I think even before we went on, I mean, you know, you could probably have 25 communications coming in from every engine in DC, every truck, and Tony Kelleher would be able to regurgitate them all verbatim. You know, he's the rain man of incident command. But, you know, not every incident commander is like that. So, you know, we have to train them that way and make sure that they track all this stuff. That's an important piece. So, you know, we go with the audio first, and then we go with some of the video, because obviously that's another stimulation of trying to make them watch stuff and also listen to stuff and then write stuff. So slowly moving into using all four of those senses or actions of listening, watching, reading, and talking on the radio as we get to a more encompassing scenario like Dan's talking about, not Dan's movie theater analogy, but just like a simple house fire. So, you know, we said we weren't going to use Sims You Share. So let me go back to that. So, Doug, what are some of the communication skills training that you do in your acting chief school?
All right. Again, as you mentioned, it's kind of a segmented and, you know, baby steps. First, again, is listening to some audio to try to make you aware of what you don't hear and what you didn't hear. And then it goes into a review of all of our codes and how, you know, with the transmission of certain codes gets certain resources so that we have a good understanding of that. Then we move into communication drills, and one of the ones that I remember distinctly, because it was very, very challenging, they had a lot of actors who came in, and we went down to, we stood in front of an alarm panel like we were at a high-rise fire, and they had actors coming in and saying, hey, I'm ladder 2, where do you need me? I'm 16 truck, where do you want me? And you had your battalion aide with you. Again, just the importance of communicating between you and your battalion aide, because your battalion aide is talking now out to the borough to what resources are needed. And then obviously there's usually maydays involved. So that was one part of it that was a very challenging drill. And it used a lot of people in a lot of parts. You basically handed out index cards with positional assignments where you would be responding and acting as a battalion chief in what capacity. Also, what they did was they included our class to be involved in tactical training. So as tactical training brought in companies for operations at the fire academy, hose line stretches, searches, or whatever, they had you or me as that acting battalion chief come during that drill and basically be the responding chief with, again, there was another chief just shadowing and listening to what was going on, but basically let you run a fire with real firefighters and real companies and real fire that they put water on. Again, having them go through the motions of just finding that cadence in the communication, that cadence of every job when it's going right and when it's going wrong, and recognizing how time for me, you know, as a 30 seconds for me inside as a truck officer doing a primary search is completely different to 30 seconds with a chief standing in the street with a clipboard and a pencil and a command sheet. It's that time difference between in an ideal age and standing outside in non-ideal age conditions is a big time warp there. So I think that communication and recognizing time, hearing, listening to what's going on around you, and also the speaking part of it, knowing what resources come on with the transmission of additional alarms and what your assignments are going to be. You know, are you going to be the attack chief? Are you going to be the safety chief? So on and so forth. Again, those were some of the decent drills that were done, and then they're not easy to do. But again, I think we all agree that investment that you make up front pays off dividends in the end. And we're talking about running fire grounds. We're not talking about, you know, punching the clock at a factory here. So we're talking about not only putting our people in harm's way, but also providing the best care we can to our citizens.
Okay, so Dan, let's talk about that Lego drill real quick, because I want to give, you know, I mean, and maybe I thought we still have some of that stuff. Maybe we can post that somewhere on social media later on. So, but I mean, what we're trying to accomplish with the Lego drill, with communication process.
So you're trying to get the root of the communication, which you already alluded to, which is listening. Your ability to actively listen, even though you want to engage, right? So very simply, we did the Lego drill, and we didn't create it. I mean, I kind of morphed it from something else, and it really worked out well. We get a 5 to 6 year old appropriate Lego that maybe has 5 pieces you have to put together. And so we have an incident commander and we have a firefighter. And the incident commander stays in a climate-controlled, non-chaos environment, a lounge chair, usually at a kitchen table, with the instructions, with a portable radio. The firefighter goes in another room with the same radio or another radio, obviously, on the same channel. And they have the disassembled Lego in front of them. And the added element, which we don't tell the incident commander, but we assume we want them to get, is that you're treating this like an incident. That firefighter is blindfolded. And the Lego is laid out exactly how it is pictured for the incident commander in their instruction sheet. So the first thing we tell firefighters, do not touch any of the parts until the incident commander calls you and tells you to start the incident. I would say, Doug, you can affirm me on this, 99.9% of those firefighters, what do you think the first thing they do is? Move everything around. So now it's completely screwed up. And then we say, start. And now all you have to do, incident commander, is tell the firefighter how to build a Lego. And I would say we probably have about a 99% failure rate. I think only one person has ever... More people want to fight Doug and I than they do actually complete the Lego. And you know, the first thing that the incident commander will say is, hey, I want you to take that piece in the right-hand corner and connect it to the left-hand side. And that's when you just see the despair just come over that firefighter like a warm blanket, because now they don't admit to the incident commander that they moved everything. They have no idea what they're talking about. And then they just try to go with it. And what we try to get out of it is, while we're going through this, how much, especially when we have multiple people doing it. So we might have 5 people building the same Lego with 5 incident commanders, and they will all talk over each other. They will not stop and go, we only had one instance where that happened. They said, stop, we're all doing the same thing. I'll take control and I'll direct those 5. And we want to hear what their communication is back and forth. Because unbeknownst to the incident commander, while that firefighter is building that Lego, Doug and I are the engine in the truck. So in the background is loud audio playing nonstop. I have a little speaker that anytime they try talking to radio, I just stick right between their mouth and the radio. They can't hear anything that well. Doug will be walking behind me with an STBA and a pass alarm and banging on things. I usually have a spray bottle of the energy company come in the room and move my hose line through their face and other places just to distract them, to get their stress level really super high. And when we do the post analysis of it, you know, we always share with them, you know, one, did the incident commander ever tell the firefighter what they were building so they could visualize what it was? Rarely do they ever do it. Do they ever start and say, hey, we're building a race car? At least now that person can visualize what the task is you want me to complete. And then we see that they forget a lot of times that they're working with someone who has one less sense. I can't tell you how many times we've heard, all right, hey, Doug, I want you to take the green piece and connect it to the black piece. And you'll hear the firefighter go, copy, chief. How do you have any idea what he's talking about? So they have completely tuned out their incident commander, and they want to focus on the task, which you see on the fire ground. And the last thing we always ask the incident commander and the firefighters is, if we gave you the Lego to build, play with, put together, take apart for an hour, do you think you'd be able to do this better? And unequivocally, they all say yes. And so what we parlay into what we share with them is, you know, don't ever discount your time in the fire service and developing mastery at every rank. Because we've all worked for the chief who tells you, hey, on the strip shopping center fire, he calls Doug on the truck and says, hey, I want you to force entry, give me a report of conditions, check the plan of space, tell me if you can get the exposures, and then start the primary search. How many of those is he really going to accomplish? Maybe one. So, but if you've done that job before, you realize it's tough to get to that back door in a strip shopping center because the increased force for entry. So the guy who has done it before, when he calls that truck and says, hey, he's on side truck, hey, see if you can force entry into the fire unit. If you can, just give me a report back on conditions. And then we can go from there. So it's really important that you have to know how to do a task if you're going to command people to do that task. And it gives you a greater appreciation for it because you're not checking the box. You are trying to command a firefight, like Doug talked about. It's a PAL doctrine. Don't put people in harm's way for unclear purposes. And just because the fire is not assimilating to the manual, it's not the fire's fault, it's your fault. You're the incident commander. So it's vitally important we do it. So we really try to harp on that, on a drill that will cost you $5 to go to a Five Below or, you know, on Amazon to get this 5 to 7 year old appropriate Lego on a rainy day or any day, just to focus on communication. And why we harp on it so much is that we know communications is always the top five in every line of duty death. Very rarely have we ever put an $8,000 tool in a firefighter's hand and gave them zero training. And fortunately, after September 11th, I know a lot of in my region, we got radios for everyone, but we didn't train people on it. We didn't train on the hardware issue of it, and we really didn't train you on the software issue of what you're supposed to be saying and listening and how you talk and when you talk. And we've gotten progressively better, but there's always room for improvement. And this is just a really easy drill that if we can start to build that foundation with the firefighter who has to listen and do the task, but also the incident commander who has a clear objective he has to meet. But, you know, as we all know, we could all be the best incident commanders on the fire ground. It doesn't make a difference if our small unit leaders don't execute the mission. And so, you know, here's a perfect opportunity to start getting that dialogue and that relationship working, that you know what you expect to hear from me, and now I know what your reaction is going to be in a stressful environment and how much I need to temper that or how much I can give you. So a really easy drill, and it always leads to good laughs, except for the few people who really didn't like Doug, you know, banging on a Halogen bar behind him or me spraying him in the face.
People don't like Doug? I can't. It's humanly impossible.
It's unbelievable. I can't think of that. I tell you, like, Doug, the drill's over. It's over.
So we go back to some of these, you know, using some of these drills, and you kind of alluded to it with the Lego drill, and then going back using incident simulation, and, you know, as a department, I mean, that's going to be a huge commitment to have all these role players there. So, I mean, I got to give our department a lot of credit. They, you know, they're paying people a lot of money to come in and sit in a room and read from a script, you know, because the script, it has to be the same for everybody using the incident simulation. But once we do that, you know, the crawl, walk, run theory, even with these incident simulations, is like Doug, Dan was alluding to, is adding those stressors in more and more and more for each simulation. So, you know, you're always going to get You know, like, I blew yesterday when I told him, hey, yeah, your first simulation is going to be a softball. You know, it's going to be, you know, a room and contents and a rancher, and, you know, and nothing bad's going to happen, you know. So don't worry about it. So just get used to how a simulation is going to run. And obviously that's for any incident commander that's going to do that. But then, you know, you slowly start ratcheting it up, and then, you know, you start adding in all the stressors such as, you know, for us, just like with Dan is, you know, and I'm sure with Doug's organization, you know, you pull the buggy in into to the garage, you know, you got a full screen ahead of you, you know, we're projecting the house fire on there. And then, you know, you get in there, you're in your solitude of confinement in the car. Cause most of ours is operated from inside the car in the front seat, you know, with the command board on the steering wheel. But then, you know, then we have somebody start calling a cell phone. You know, like the deputy's calling a cell phone, or the assistant chief's calling a cell phone, or one of his employees is calling a cell phone, doesn't know he's on a fire. And, you know, we have people start knocking on the window. Those stressors and distractions actually help when we go out into the field. You know, it's irritating. You just want to get through that simulation. But I know when we were doing this in Florida, our process was with our personnel accountability is that everybody had to come to the command post, even though we had a standard operating procedure where they're supposed to be, but they had to drop their passport off. So you had to come in and drop your passport off. And, you know, usually you get a word or two with the incident commander. So, you know, if you're in a tight response area, that's where the simulation is at. Then you get four or five people walking in with their passports, and, you know, and firefighters are great for it. And, you know, they could fling that passport from 10 feet away. The incident commander say, hey, I'm going to the fire floor and you know, mosey on out. And then they forget to track them on the board or something. So, you know, any of those stressors that you can add in during your simulation. I'm not going to speak Dan, but I know the first week we did ours with our simulations, everybody's reading from the script, everybody's sitting at the table, you know, reading directly from it, verbatim. And then, you know, as the days went on, then we added a face piece, then we added a regulator, so the firefighters were starting to get into the, and then we'd have inaudible transmissions, you know, just once again to stress the incident commander out why he's in that controlled environment and dealing with these myriad of problems that he has on the fire ground, plus having communications issues, you know, and then anything that you want to add on there. So, but once again, you just can't go do that. You can't have the first fire that you're going to give somebody in a simulation, a Mayday fire with fire on two floors, and, you know, then and three more missing firefighters. You know, you're just going to fail miserably like that. So, you know, that crawl, walk, run type theory of training. But, you know, there's a series of things. So Dan, I mean, what kind of resources, and Tony, if you got something, raise your hand. I have a question for Dan's movie theater analogy. So, I mean, what kind of resources does the department, I mean, how many role players have to be there for a 40-minute duration thing, which is, you know, now that's one of my goals, and I wrote it down. You know, let's make something past, you know, 30 minutes, so.
Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the beauty of it. Like, if we're talking about the Lego drill, that's a company drill. You don't need a chief or captain. That's inside the company. When we go to the command training center, I know when we've had that, and you look, I mean, yes, we are the Gold Coast, but the pandemic hit everyone's economy. So we don't have copious overtime. So once you get people who are really good at doing the role playing, when we did that larger scale incident, I think we had three or four people. Now, they were multiple units and they had their script. And so, hey, you're the rescue company, you're the truck company, you're the other truck company. And they would be various, there'd be enough various voices that the incident commander didn't pick up on it. But we only took us three or four role players to typically run through it, but they had rehearsed it and they had been through it. And the beauty of it too is when we talk about the importance of this development, this talent management, you know, all those people who were doing the role playing are people who aspire to want to be chiefs. So they're listening to what the chief is doing. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard when we were running our chiefs through it that, hey, chief, I got a lot out of this by listening to what that battalion did versus this battalion. So they're already picking up the finite differences between, or the nuances in the command between this guy, and this girl. Like, they're picking up on all that. And they're already starting to develop this. So they're listening for things they typically never listen to. We all know when you came as a firefighter, like, I don't think hearing the chief. We're going to go do our work. But now these are people who are now getting into it. They're getting communications training. So if you can get a crop of 10 people and start getting them circulating the training and understanding, you know, then they start giving inputs. You know, they start just freewheeling with some of the things they want to add in there because they know what you're aiming to try to do and they try to make it realistic. So it really doesn't take a whole lot. It does to get it off the ground because you got to get people trained to not sound like robots, to really know the incident, and they can do it. But by the seventh time we had ran this the movie theater, they were game for it. I mean, I had to, you know, we had to kind of temper them, like, don't screw with the chief. Like, stop throwing other things, like there's a donkey in here. Like, why? No, just stick to the plot. And they did a really good job. So it doesn't take many people once you get them trained and they understand what the expectation and what you're trying to get out of the incident is.
I think you probably should rotate those people too, right? Because imagine when they go out in the field and the kind of reports they're going to be able to give to command, right? Yeah. I think that's one of the big things about that little communication drill, the Lego thing, right? Everybody takes a turn in every position. So it's not like just the officer is the one who's giving is the incident commander. So that new person knows how vital, right, that airtime is and how good the report needs to be. I tell my guys, look, if you get the radio, give me, you know, make it plain English. Give me exactly. You got the mic, you know, explain it and make sure it's understandable. Another thing I wanted to unpack some of the stuff you said earlier about if you've never done the drill, then being in the chief's buggy, you don't know how long it takes, right? Last night I had a run where it was wasn't a whole lot of radio talking, and I know that there are some, you know, maybe my boss who's like waiting for me to call and get an update. Give me an update. Well, you got to give them time to work, right? You have to give them time to work, and it goes both ways. You would really like that company officer to take time in the buggy so he knows what it's like being in that position, and then the battalion chief take time back on a rig, you know, so he knows how long it's going to take to do a primary search or how long it's going to take to stretch that line to the third floor of that three-story apartment building. This would be an all-encompassing training. Again, if you have that week of battalion chief class and you're able to put the battalion chiefs or the prospective candidates on rigs so you have live fire, I mean, that would be a real good home run there. One other thing, I want to finish my time, but we talk the LODD stuff that we talk about when all these things come in. You guys just saw the report came out from Philadelphia. And if you look at Philly's report, again, not the NIOSH one, but the Philly internal one, it touches on a lot of these recommendations, a lot of incident command training, battalion chief level training, command stuff. I remember, and it seems like a lot of the internal ones that come out, I remember it was at Gordon, FAO Gordon in Cincinnati several years ago, after his death, a lot of stuff about command and the training. Again, this is where we have to invest. We have to invest the effort and the time into training the incident commanders, especially, I know Doug says like once he gets promoted, then he has to go into the field. He has to go to training to do this. Again, we should be, getting the up and comers and the ones you've identified that want to do the job and train them before they are in the position. The Philly report, that's tough. There's a lot going on there. I think we've all been in a fire like that where we're going to work a little bit longer. And, the bad thing happened. Matt was a shooting star in the fire service. He's going to be a real, real loss there for Philly and everybody in that area. But no, I think this is great. And I'm glad that we revisited this topic from last month, because we did talk a lot last month, but it didn't seem like we hit on how to what training we're going to do. So thanks, Ricky.
Hey, you're muted, Ricky.
So obviously, all of us have a social media presence. So I mean, if you want some more information about some of these drills that you can help out with your incident commanders, Tony is very active with fire engineering with his Midday Monday stuff, and you know, be more than happy to help you out. Dan and Doug both are easily reachable through social media, as am I. You know, we can kind of help you with some of this stuff. I think it's important, you know, like Tony just said, that we talked a lot. And theory is probably a bad word, but, you know, we gave the lecture portion of it. I think we got to also now deal with the hands-on portion of being a battalion chief. You know, like one of my pet peeves in Florida was that, you know, the incident commander or the aide better have the headset on. You know, somebody better have a headset on to listen to that call, you know. So that's one of those things that we incorporate into the training, is that, you know, somebody's wearing a headset, so we're able to hear those vital transmissions from our members that are in the IDLA. So just those little pieces, the audio clips, yeah, you can search YouTube. It took me maybe 20, 25 minutes one day of just searching YouTube videos like residential fire, house fires, and then incident commander stuff, and then finding some of this stuff from Stockton, and I forget the name. There's another town. Also, I forget the battalion chief's name, that he GoPro'd everything with radio transmissions. You can get incident audio from your own organizations to go through. I think, you know, that's what Doug was alluding to, having to listen to some of that. You know, I don't know if there's actual words in Doug's. Aren't they all just like 10 codes? You know, you just say 10 this, 10 that, 10 that, and then
pretty much
everything goes better.
As long as you know what the 10 codes are, then you know what they're saying.
Hey, man, stand strong, man. I a lot of respect. You know, we're not bowing down to the federal pressure or fire service pressure. We're going to do what we know works, and I love it. So look, we only got a couple more minutes here, so before we sign off. But hey, we appreciate you being with us. I appreciate all, you know, Tony, Dan, and Doug taking the time out of their day to help out for each one of our organizations and for fire engineering and the Clarion group. Obviously, a lot of our instructors had busy days. Larry's taking care of family today, babysitting. So that's definitely more important than what we're doing today is babysitting. So I appreciate him checking in with us, and hopefully get us all back. Maybe Tony Carrick can actually talk to Tony Kelleher into, you know, finding out what a telephone is and using it to reach out to the rest of us. So I actually had to track him down the other day to talk to him. But he looked good in a white shirt, and he looked good in a battalion chief's car. So it's going to be a good thing for the D.C. Fire Department. So hey, from all of us at the International Society of Fire Service Instructors and Traditions Training, we appreciate you being with us on Fire Engineering Day. Thanks to Bobby Holden. Thanks to the Clarion Group. Yes, Tony, sorry.
Hey, if you're ISFSI member, later today we're having a happy hour, 4 o'clock. You can sign up on the website to RSVP for that, but you're welcome. And hopefully I'll see you there. But I might be driving because I'm going into work. So,
will all the cool kids be on that one? I mean, like, will Stevie Pegram actually dial in and all that? And, you know, Brad French and all, do they actually dial in? Or?
Yeah, you might see some of them. They make appearances.
As a matter of fact, I get to do a review of a St. Louis fire truck next week for fire apparatus. It's one that I guess Larry just got, Conley just got in St. Louis. So it'll be pretty interesting. So it's a Quint, though, so we're not going to talk about that. But. So, Dan, Doug, hey, thanks for calling in. Doug, Doug, were you vomiting or are you going to go back out?
I guess the response to the word is starts with Q.
Yes. Hey, Doug, thanks for calling in on your vacation. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks from all of us. Have a great day.
Good day, everybody.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tammy.
Oh, you're welcome, as always. Have you talked to Bobby anymore about May Day Monday?
No, maybe I should email him. Is that the best thing?
Best way to get a hold of Bobby is email him.
Yeah, see you, Tammy.
Hi, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Well, if you think that there's interest there, I will.
I think there's interest there. Get it started. Get the ball rolling.
Well, my horoscope said something about communicating and webcast or something. So I'll follow up.
Oh, webcast too, huh?
Well, they could do this on the first Monday. It'd be good.
Yeah. I mean, is that what you like to do, like the first Monday of every month?
I think that that would be, again, drive that point home. That's when I release my thing, is the first Monday of the month. So if we could do
first Monday of September is Labor Day.
Maybe we could take a break and start it in October or whatever. I could talk to, if you want me to, I'll talk to Bobby about that.
Okay. I'm just looking through the next year. January 1st is also a Monday.
September's here. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, we could always pre-record it too.
That might work too, especially if I find a guest or something that's not available on that, you know, to do live.
Yep, I can pre-record it and just release it.
Okay, cool.
All right, thank you, sir. Hey, be safe, be well, hang in there.
Yeah.
Bye.